And we're back now. News Talk 107.9. It's Neil Larson along with Julie Mason. And we're joined by Brian Allman. He is the editor of Gem State Chronicle and also a communications consultant with the Idaho Republican Party. Brian, welcome to the program this morning.
Good morning, Neil. Julie, it's good to be here.
Well, let's likewise, and we appreciate you making some time for us. Let's talk about the legislative session. It seems like it's all about the budget. And late last week, we saw some kind of higher temperature rhetoric happening inside JFAC. And we would just love your take on this issue.
Sure. Yeah, we knew it was going to be a big issue, the budget coming into this session, because of the lower revenue last year, coming in slightly lower than what they expected. So that means not enough money to go around. It's actually the last few years they've had a lot of money to go around. Even while lowering taxes, they've been able to increase spending here and there. And so the job of JFAC has been to figure out, okay, how much money do we have available to give people? And now this year, it's the opposite. How much do we have to cut? And that's obviously ruffling some feathers. You know, every agency thinks that their budget's the most important. And if you cut this, then, you know, people are going to suffer. Idaho's going to suffer. But that's one of the jobs of our legislators, is to make the hard choices in a time like this, where we have to, you know, tighten our belts, as they say, and figure out where they can trim things. And they made the decision to do basically across the board cuts. The governor cut 3%, and JFAC voted for the next fiscal year to cut another 2%. Now, they exempted some things. They said, well, we're not going to cut K-12 education. We're not going to cut Department of Corrections. We're not going to cut state police. But then all the other departments, they're just doing it across the board, and then they'll have to come back with the enhancement budgets over the rest of the session and figure out where what is the priority? Where do we need to maybe increase things, and where can we make that up by cutting things? And of course, you know, some people disagree with that. And like you said, things got a little heated in the debates.
From our vantage point, and he's a senator from here in East Idaho, Senator Kevin Cook has probably gotten the most media play when he said, I believe it was to Representative Tanner, that these cuts have the potential to, quote, break the state. And I'd love your reaction to that claim by Senator Cook.
Well, I respectfully disagree with Senator Cook. I don't think it's going to break the state. I wrote a whole article about it over the weekend at Gem State Chronicle about where our budget is today, where it's been over the past few years, and what these cuts actually mean. You look at just raw numbers, and the budget's gone up 30, 40, 50, 60% in the past 5, 6, 7 years. So was our state broken before those budget increases went in? I don't think so. I think we're pretty good. And even on a per capita accounting for inflation basis, you account for inflation and population growth, our budget still has been increasing. So, unless you were ready to claim that we were broken before these increases, I don't think you can say that it's going to break things to cut things just a little bit. And, you know, as people in JFAC noted, you can still add things back in the enhancement budgets if they're really, really, really necessary. Then, you know, just convince the rest of your legislators that to vote for those budgets to increase those things. But also, I would say, if you're arguing that a 5% budget cut breaks things, then doesn't that necessarily follow that a 5% increase will make things even better? And if that's the case, then why not 10%? Why not 50%? Why not 100%? Why not just take all the tax dollars and start distributing them, you know, the way you see fit? You know, that's the job of government, is not to just fund every single program. It's to make choices about what it does with our tax dollars and do it in a responsible manner.
All right, Brian, let's chat about the rest of the legislative session. You've got your finger on the pulse of that. What have you seen that's occurring that you have felt has a chance to move forward and potentially become law? We've talked a lot about Representative Ted Hill's flag bill. There's been others. So I'll just open the floor up to you and let you choose what you'd like to chat about.
Oh, goodness. There's a lot of moving parts right now. I think today, later today, is actually the deadline for bill introductions. So there's a lot more print hearings on the calendar, and then we'll see which ones start moving forward. Like you said, Representative Hill, he's from my district, so I've heard a lot about this, trying to figure out what to do about that flag issue. It passed the, I believe it passed, or no, it's in the amending order in the House. So I think it'll pass there. We'll see what happens. There's a couple of bills talking about things like foreign law. Senator Foreman had a bill to say that we're not going to have any religiously based law. You know, he's kind of talking about Sharia law, but you can't really narrow it down to just one. So you have to do a broad brush, but that one failed. Whereas Speaker Moyle introduced a bill that talks about foreign law instead of religious law. So that one might pass. I know a lot of people are concerned about things like Sharia law and things that are not based in our Constitution and our tradition. That looks like it's going forward. There's a bill talking about short-term rentals, saying that cities can't restrict property owners from using their homes that they own for Airbnbs or things like that, unless there's a public safety issue. And that one's been heavily promoted by some people and opposed by a lot of other people who worry about the second order effects of that.
I was going to say, what about the E-Verify bills? We've got a couple of competing bills there. Have you been watching those, and do you have an opinion about that?
I have, and I do. There's one in the Senate side that was introduced, I believe, by Senator Mark Harris. And my opinion of that was it really doesn't do anything because it just applies E-Verify requirements to companies that have over 150 employees and over $100,000 in state contracts, which is a very narrow slice of companies that, if they have that many employees and that many contracts, they probably also have federal contracts that require E-Verify anyway. On the other hand, Representative Jordan Redman, I know he has a bill. I think they're coming out with a new version, if he hasn't already, that applies E-Verify to all employers, which obviously is going to have a much broader scope. And I believe E-Verify is a good step. It will make it more difficult, I think, for people who are not here legally to gain employment. Now, obviously, they could be using false papers and they could, pass that way. But my sense is that if that's the case, then that takes the liability for it away from the employer and sends it over to the federal government, because they can say, well, we did our due diligence and, the federal government had the wrong information. So, we're blameless here, which I think would be good for everybody. It would be good for employers and it would be good for Idaho.
So, Brian, I wanted to ask you about this because on Friday, I believe, there was a big press conference with Tommy Ahlquist and a bunch of ag leaders from the Farm Bureau, the dairymen, and others, where they were kind of pleading with lawmakers not to really touch this issue because it was going to be so destabilizing to the ag industry. Is that not kind of an admission that the ag industry is indeed employing wide, big numbers of illegals, number one? And number two, is there kind of a Barbara Streisand effect here where you're trying to avoid a problem, but you're actually drawing more attention to it by holding a press conference like this?
I think that's, I think that's the case in both cases. I remember a couple of years ago, the lobbyist for the Idaho Dairymen's Association said in committee, and I think he repeated it in another committee hearing, that up to 70% of their employees in the dairy industry could potentially fail an I-9 audit. Now, that doesn't mean that 70% are illegal, but it could be up to that number, which is a pretty stark number. And so if the dairy industry, the ag industry, the farmers are so reliant on a system that is built on, something that's inherently illegal, I think the best way forward is to figure out how to fix that and not just say, well, we're just going to keep going, just leave it alone. Or in the alternative, we just need a federal law that legalizes all these people so that it just puts a rubber stamp on it saying it's okay. I would like to see the industry leaders work with the legislature to find that path forward instead of digging in their heels and saying, we have to do things this way. I remember talking to a member of the Dairymen's Association a few weeks ago at the Capitol, and I asked him, I was just having friendly conversation, and Representative Birch came over and told him that I'm opposed to illegal immigrants, or I think he said opposed to all immigrants, which isn't the case. He's just trying to start things being who he is. And so we kind of had a little conversation. I asked, so what is it that makes it so hard to hire Americans? And he said that they try, but they all fail their drug tests. So I don't know. That's one person's opinion, one person's experience. But what do we need to do to make it easier to hire Americans or people who are here legally, rather than continuing this pipeline of illegal aliens that it's not good for anybody. It's not good for them because they're coming here with no ability to control their environment, because they step out of line or they want to work somewhere else, they could lose their status. They could be reported to ICE or whatever. They have little ability to, push for better pay or better conditions. And that, of course, causes all sorts of downstream problems with the healthcare industry, the housing industry, whoever it is getting their identity stolen by these people. So let's talk about fixing it, not just making the problem deeper.
All right. Another thing that came up in the legislative session, and both Neil and I were a little puzzled by the votes in the House, but this is the repealing of the Blaine Amendment. And I know you watched that very closely. Why don't you tell us how you felt about that? And did you think the votes were going to go the way they did?
So, yeah, I was watching that closely. I even volunteered to testify on in favor of that bill in committee. I think it's something that is important to do, just because it really is a relic of a long time ago, this amendment that says that no public money can go to sectarian institutions. Of course, we already have public money going to religious schools. The Lodge Grant can be used at Northwest Nazarene and BYU at Idaho. I wasn't surprised by the vote. It was a majority, but not a two-thirds majority that was necessary. I remarked on Twitter the day after the vote that this is, I think, a good overview of where we stand as conservatives in the legislature. We have a solid critical mass, a solid majority to get a lot of good things done, but not quite enough to get two-thirds to start proposing constitutional amendments, even if, in my opinion, it's common sense. There were a few oddities in that vote, but it went about as I expected.
I don't know for sure, but I would suspect that the House Bill 93, its passage last year and it being upheld by the Idaho Supreme Court this year, may have been an impetus for bringing that Blaine Amendment bill forward. Maybe talk really quick, Brian, about the future of House Bill 93. I know already Senator Cook wants to make it the target of one of the cuts that are being proposed. House Bill 93 has the trifecta. It's been upheld by the legislature, the governor, now the judicial branch. But do you worry about death by a thousand cuts with this, that in the future there will be lawmakers like Senator Cook and others who don't like it that will try to just incrementally disable it?
Well, as it stands right now, I don't think that Senator Cook's plan to cut the parental choice tax credit is going to go through the legislature. I don't even really expected to get through the Senate, because this is the same Senate, the exact same makeup on the Senate side that passed House Bill 93 just 1 year ago. And as I wrote the other day when I responded to his proposal, is that we haven't even seen it in effect. The filing window for the tax credit, we're only halfway through. We don't know how many families are going to apply in the end, and we don't know what the outcome is. Whereas Lodge, which is the program that did see some cuts, has been around for a couple of years. We're starting to see the effects, and they actually had some extra money there because some students who were awarded those grants decided not to go to school or for whatever reason. So I think right now it's fine. The question is what's going to happen in the future. This May is going to be a big defining election, the primary. The teachers union is spending a lot of money to unseat anybody who supported school choice last year. They're really going hard to the mat. It'll be interesting to see what effect that has. If they're successful and they turn over a lot of seats that voted in favor of House Bill 93, then we could see a legislature next year who's willing to cut it or even get rid of it, which I hope is not the case, and I hope I hope they're not successful in that. But that's politics. Anything can happen after the next election.
All right, Brian. Last question. A week or two ago, the Democrats announced that they're bringing in none other than Tim Walz, the disgraced governor of Minnesota, as their headliner. We'd love your take on this.
Oh, the Democrats. My gut feeling is that they they worked that out right before the Governor Waltz worked out his deal to actually allow his law enforcement to support ICE instead of fight against them over in Minnesota. And so maybe they were, I think they're figuring he's the face of the resistance to Trump and he's the face of the resistance to ICE. And so we're going to bring him here and rally, you know, the however many Democrats there are in Idaho. You know, my take is that they needed somebody who was a strong, masculine leader and charismatic and could really move a crowd, but they got Tim Walz instead. So what you gonna do?
Strong and masculine, that is not. Can I throw in one more question before we end the interview? Yeah, I wanted to chat with you. There is this tug of war back and forth about when the primary is going to be in Idaho. We have still the finger pointing by various people, some pointing at the Secretary of State, some pointing at Dorothy Moon. Like, it's so much finger pointing at the confusion of the primary date and then the caucus that happened. What would you like to see happen for the upcoming presidential election?
Well, personally, I enjoyed the caucus. I was a caucus captain in my precinct. I helped set it up and manage it. And for me, it was a lot of fun, but I'm, you know, a political junkie, so I enjoy those sorts of things. I remember some people there telling me that they were frustrated by it. They wanted to have an actual primary election where you just come, drop off your ballot and go, and it's open from 8 to 8, not, you know, the style that we did. I'm actually not sure of what the best idea is here, because if you have two primaries, one in March, one in May, that's extra money. Bring it people to the polls. It's going to decrease turnout. If you have one primary just in May, then most likely the primary is going to be over. We'll know who the nominee is and nobody will, it won't matter what we say. So it really is a catch 22 where there's no good outcome here. I'd love to see another caucus, but I know a lot of people would rather just do a primary. I did see a bill to reestablish a primary in March that was introduced. I don't think it's gotten a hearing yet. So I know the legislature is going to keep debating that this year, probably next year as well, as we get toward the 2028 election. Like I said, I don't know what the best way forward is there. And I look forward to seeing some more discussion and debate on it.
And luckily, we do have a little bit of time before we have to have a final decision on it. Brian Ullman, gemstatechronicle.com is his website. He also does a lot of work for the Idaho Republican Party as well. Brian, great to talk with you. We appreciate your time this morning.
Thanks, Neil. Thanks, Julie. Talk to you later.